Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise, and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-TRIM. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
It's Monday, December the 11th. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Quite obviously, I am not Mike Malloy. My name's Jeff Farias. I'm going to be sitting in for Mike Malloy for the next 3 hours here on the Malloy Show. Mike is recovering from a pretty nasty bout of that respiratory flu that's going around and torturing so many Americans right now out there. We're going to have a lot of fun tonight. Lots of things in the news to talk about. Lots of stories I got ready for you. But what I really want to do tonight is open up the phones. I want this to be the most caller-driven program you've ever heard. This is your soapbox, your chance to talk about priorities. Any topic is on the table. What are our priorities? We won this historic election. What are we going to do from here? Where do we go from here? Any topic is on the table. You want to talk about health care? John Conyers has a bill called H.R. 676, which provides for a system of universal single-payer health care. You want to talk about that? How about the Military Commissions Act? Will the Democrats step up and turn that back? Voting reform. Rush Holt has a bill, H.R. 550. Dianne Feinstein is working on a similar bill in the Senate. Of course, there's the Iraq War. There's the debacle in Afghanistan. The subject of outsourcing. The fall of the dollar. Our economy. 9/11 investigations. What's up with our food supply? Immigration. War profiteers. Gulf Coast. When are we going to start rebuilding the Gulf Coast? Lots of things to talk about. I want to know what you want to think. What's on your mind? One thing I don't want to talk about tonight. One topic is off the table for me anyway. If this is your topic, we're going to have a short chat. I have no interest in talking about the 2008 presidential elections. No interest in talking about that, folks. It's way too early to even make any sense out of what's going to happen in November 2008. At this time, in the last election cycle, in December, after the last midterm election in 2002, The front runner for President of the United States on the Democratic ticket was Joe Lieberman with 31% of the vote. And we all know how that turned out. So talking about presidential elections, Obama versus Hillary, Wes Clark, is Al Gore going to run, all that stuff, it just doesn't matter. We're not going to talk about it yet. But I would like to know what's on your mind regarding what should our priorities be? Where the Democrats are they going to take us? What are we going to do, and how are we going to hold them accountable? One little bit of news. I'm a huge fan of op-ed columnist Paul Krugman in the New York Times. Krugman's a economics professor at Princeton University. Was originally called into the New York Times to sort of write an economy op-ed piece. Eventually, he sort of evolved into politics and looking at the Bush administration. So this is Krugman's column from today. It's called Outsourcer in Chief, and I'm just going to read that to you, and that'll launch our discussion today, okay? We have only one guest today. I know it's fairly unusual. Mike does usually doesn't do guests, but in light of the fact that a court case was resolved today in New York City, Cindy Sheehan's going to join us in the first half hour here today. We'll be speaking to her right after the first break, just a short update on what happened. It's already late at night there in New York, and I'm sure she's ready to get some rest, and we'll get right to your phone calls right after this quick call on Paul Krugman, okay? According to U.S. News and World Report, President Bush has told aides that he won't respond in detail to the Iraq Study Group's report because he doesn't want to outsource the role of commander-in-chief. Now, that's pretty ironic. You see, outsourcing of the government's responsibilities, not to panels of supposed wise men, but to private companies with the right connections, has been one of the hallmarks of this administration. And privatization through outsourcing is one reason the administration has failed on so many fronts. For example, an article in Saturday's New York Times describes how the Coast Guard has run a $17 billion modernization program. Instead of managing the project itself, the Coast Guard hired Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, two of the nation's largest military contractors, to plan, supervise, and deliver the new vessels and helicopters. The result? Well, expensive ships that aren't seaworthy. The Coast Guard ignored repeated warnings from its own engineers that the boats and ships were poorly designed and perhaps unsafe, while the contractors failed to fulfill their obligation to make sure the government got the best price, frequently steering work to the subsidiaries or business partners instead of competitors. In Afghanistan, the job of training a new police force was outsourced to DynCorp International, a private contractor under very loose supervision. When conducting a recent interview, auditors couldn't even find a copy of DynCorp's contract to see what it called for. And $1.1 billion later, Afghanistan still doesn't have an effective police training program. In July 2004, Government Executive Magazine published an article titled Outsourcing Iraq, documenting how the U.S. occupation authorities had transferred responsibility for reconstruction to private contractors. With hardly any oversight, the only plan, it said, appears to have been to let the private sector manage nation building, mostly on their own, and we all know how that turned out. On the home front, the Bush administration outsourced many responsibilities of the FEMA. For example, the job of evacuating people from disaster areas was given to a trucking logistics firm, Landstar Express America. When Hurricane Katrina struck, Landstar didn't even know where to get buses. According to Kerry Limousine, which was eventually hired, Landstar found us on the website. It's now clear and that there's a fundamental error in the anti-government ideology embraced by today's conservative movement. Conservatives look at the virtues of market competition and leap to the conclusion that private ownership in itself is some kind of magic elixir. But there's no reason to assume that a private company hired to perform a public service will do better than people employed directly by the government. In fact, the private company will almost surely do a worse job if its political connections insulate it from accountability, which has, of course, consistently been the case under Mr. Bush. The inspector's report on Afghanistan's police conspicuously avoided assessing DynCorp's performance. Even as government auditors found fault with Landstar, the company received a plaque from the Department of Transportation honoring its hurricane relief efforts. Underlying this lack of accountability are the real motives for turning government functions over to private companies, which have little to do with efficiency. To state the obvious, when you see a story about failed outsourcing, you can be sure that the company in question is either a major contributor to the Republican Party, is run by people with strong GOP connections, or both. So what happens now? The failure of privatization under the Bush administration offers a target-rich environment to the newly empowered congressional Democrats. And I say, let the subpoenas fly. Bear in mind that we're not talking about just wasted money. Contracting failures in Iraq helped us lose one war. Similar failures in Afghanistan may help us lose another. And FEMA's failures helped us lose a great American city. And maybe, just maybe, the abject failure of this administration's efforts to outsource essential functions to the private sector will diminish the anti-government prejudice created by decades of right-wing propaganda. That's important, because the presumption that the private sector can do no wrong and the government can do nothing right prevents us from coming to grips with some of America's biggest problems, in particular, our wildly dysfunctional healthcare system. More on that in future columns. That's Paul Krugman from the New York Times, Outsourcing of America. Let's get into the phones. We got time for one call before the break. Let's go to Chris in San Rafael, California. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing good.
Hey, man, I just wanted to grab your thoughts on our fiat currency heading down the tubes, putting us into a recession of 2007. As a result of some conflict flaring up in the Middle East between Iran, Syria, backing Lebanon, and Israel, which is under attack from both flanks, including Palestine.
The Saudis say they're about to get in the game as well, too. So,
you know, oil prices could go skyrocketing. Mm-hmm. We've got a housing market here that's in the doldrums.
Right. Not to mention our huge debt to the Chinese and the Japanese.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah, it's not a bright picture for 07, and there are also rumblings under the surface. I'm going to talk about this a little bit on my weekend show. The AMERO, or the North American Union, there have been some, I heard some talk kind of bubbling up about this, that there's a group quietly at work to sort of create something very similar to what they have in Europe with the European Union here on this continent, and somehow melding the currencies of Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. But it should be interesting to see how all that plays out. What do you think about where the economy's heading?
Well, you know, I'm a bit of a you know, early getting in, kind of an amateur here looking at the markets. I don't invest myself, but mm-hmm. I've gotten more concerned as I've watched kind of what's going on, and it seems to me like the cards are stacked, or the deck is stacked, you know, in a precarious way.
Right.
And when you've got the kind of out of control spending, debts, deficits, you know, no gold behind our currency, nothing of real value at this point, it looks to me like Paulson, you know, at the Treasury, he's got a bad and worse choice to make here next year between inflation or deflation, you know, increasing rates or decreasing rates.
Mm-hmm.
If he increases the rates, he's going to, you know, send the housing market into even a greater slump, especially anybody out there that's got an ARM, an adjustable rate mortgage.
Right, those are the ones most affected by that kind of thing, yeah.
You know, and then on the other hand, if he decreases the rates, we're talking about, you know, having everybody flee in the foreign exchange currency markets from holding all our dollars.
Right. Yep. You know what? We'll just have to keep. I'm not much of an economist myself. I watch the markets. I see a lot of dangerous trends out there. I don't know if our Congress can turn it around in 2 quick years. But Chris, thanks for your call. We got to get to a break. When we get back on the other side, we're going to talk to Cindy Sheehan a little bit about her court trial and lots more of your phone calls. I hope. I want to open this up. This is your soapbox tonight. 3 hours of caller-driven radio. I want to hear what's on your mind. We'll be right back after these messages.
Esther C. Look for Esther C. where better vitamins are sold.
In August of 05, a mighty voice did rise. She lost her precious son, and it can't be undone. She went to see the king, a downright simple thing. She thought she'd tell him of the depth of a mother's love. Back our sons and our daughters. Send us back our sons and our daughters.
Hey, that's Jesse Dine, our good friend of this station and this program, a song about Cindy Sheehan. We're working on trying to get Cindy on the line, probably at the next break. Actually, let's just wait till the bottom of the hour. We missed her on that next one, having some telephone problems. We got a shorter segment here, so we'll just take a few phone calls in the interim, and we'll try and get Cindy again at the bottom of the hour. Let's look, who's up next? We got Richard in Wyoming. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hi there, Jeff. How's it going?
I'm doing pretty good.
First of all, I'm not an economist either, but the previous caller, Chris from San Rafael,
mm-hmm.
The book, which accurately describes everything he's talking about, is called Financial Reckoning Day. I don't know if they put one out every year or not. And they talk in depth about the danger of fiat currency and how the government basically is solving its problems by just printing more money, and eventually the chickens will come home to roost.
Right.
Recommended reading. It's the only economics book I've ever read, so it's just a coincidence that the previous guy happened to have mentioned it. I'm calling right now to say woo-hoo, Kucinich is getting in the race.
And, love Dennis Kucinich.
Absolutely, and yep. With Cindy Sheehan coming up next, it's a good lead-in to her because, you know, he is extremely anti-war.
Yep.
He was downplayed too much during the previous election, and that was a shame, but he's got my attention now. But for 08, it's going to be more than just the personality they get to run. I know for myself that I need to see strong liberal actions coming out of this Congress, whether or not they're effective. They won't be, because they don't have, you know, they've got,
well,
what's his name in office.
Right, there's a veto waiting down the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue for him,
They've got to put him out there.
Right.
They've got to make this guy say no to these things. They've
yep.
got to make him say, no, we're going to keep them in Iraq. They've got them make them say, no, I want to keep the minimum wage where it's at, although he won't do that.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to make them take stands that, well, will doom him. And
yeah,
if they don't, then we know what the Democrats are, and I hope I'm wrong.
Right. Well, I hope they do, because, you know, what Bush will be doing then is writing our campaign commercials for us, pretty much, all the way down. Here's what we're trying to do for the American people, and here's why we couldn't. This is all the more reason to get a Democrat in the White House. So.
Yep.
Hopefully that'll play. Yeah, love Kucinich. Love his stand. When it was extremely unpopular to be against the war, it was pretty much him and Howard Dean were the only national figures who were really speaking out against it, and they both have my undying support. So.
And mine too.
Yep. Hey, Richard, thanks a lot for your call.
Yep, thank you, Jeff.
Take care. Bye-bye. Let's go to our buddy Sarge in Mississippi. Sarge, welcome to the program.
How you doing tonight, Jeff?
I'm doing pretty well.
Jeff, I'm a little hot under the collar tonight.
Why is that?
I was talking down on the Mississippi coast to a fellow named Dave Vincent. He is the director of WLOX Television in Biloxi, Gulfport, Pascagoula.
Mm-hmm.
And the man more or less called Jim Yancey and me liars.
You're kidding me.
I asked him how things were going down there as if I didn't already know. And he said, oh, we're doing fine. We're much better off than New Orleans. And I said, no, sir, you are wrong. In fact, there are problems there. Would you like to tell me a few of them? The man would not tell me. He got mad. He and I got in a shouting match with each other. And before we went into the Katrina discussion, we had a little discussion about a show of his on his station called Good Morning South Mississippi, where one of his young men, I can't think of the guy's name right offhand, got up about 6 months ago and said, today is the day that Hitler rose to power in Germany. And he got up, clicked his heels together, and gave a Nazi salute and laughed. And his co-host was laughing as well. And one person called and asked Mr. Vincent why he allows such trash. And he said, you're the only one that's complained. And I don't think it was a joke. That's all it was. It was a joke. It doesn't matter. And the man told him, said, sir, it's not funny to those people who have loved ones that died from Hitler's cruelty. And I think your man deserves discipline. And yet Vincent blew this guy off. And then today when I asked him, he blew me off just as well. This guy is doing people harm on the Mississippi coast. They are not covering issues. There was two housing units that he reported that were going to be taken over by HUD. I got involved. I found out that indeed it was not HUD, but it was Governor Barbour that was taking the housing away, that HUD was being used as the scapegoat, and I stopped it. Mr. Vincent refused to even bother to investigate this.
Wow.
And when I gave him the story, he refused to announce it on his station.
Hey, Sarge, I gotta cut you off. Hey, you want to hang on? You want to come back?
Sure.
On the other
sure.
Side? I'm going to hold you to the other side. We'll be right back with more of the Mike Malloy. Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. My name is Jeff Faria, sitting in for Mike Malloy while he's recovering from a nasty respiratory flu. If you want to join the conversation this evening, 1-800-989-1480, our universal toll-free number. I'm broadcasting from our flagship station right here in Phoenix, Arizona, KPHX 1480. You can check us out on the stream at www.novamradio.com. Check out my website, truthtopowerhour.com. I do a three-hour show every Saturday here in Phoenix on Nova M called the Truth to Power Hour, dealing in all kinds of local, national, and recently international issues for the network here. Anyway, when we just left off, we were talking with Sarge in Mississippi. Sarge, welcome back on.
Thank you, Jeff. And by the way, you have a very good show. I was on it Friday, and you gave Jim a whole hour, and people listen to the show. He is good.
Well, thank you.
But to wrap it up briefly, What I'm trying to do, I'm going to put the story about all of this on my website, unreportednews.net, and I have sent you three emails with a copy of all of this story from where I got it with all the facts, so you'll know what I'm talking about when you read it. But this man is covering up a lot of the wrongdoings. He's not putting it on his TV station, and this ultimately is causing a lot of people a lot of harm. And I would like it for people to go to my site, read this story, and let's send some letters to the FCC, and let's see about getting this man disciplined somehow.
That's a great idea, Sarge. Thanks, and thanks for all the work you do in the recovery on the Gulf Coast there in Katrina.
Well, you know, you got a lady coming on that's one of my inspirations, Miss Cindy Sheehan. I've never met the woman, but she is truly one of the great people, and she is one of my inspirations.
Yeah, she's something else. She really is. Hey, thanks a lot, Sarge. Good talking to you. Yeah, we're still trying to hook up with Cindy in New York. We got a cell phone number on her, and our buddy Ian is in there feverishly trying to track her down. In the meantime, there's plenty to talk about in the news. Well, apparently the Bush administration is reacting to the Baker-Hamilton Commission report, and pretty interesting, actually. It seems like all they've really gleaned from it is a new slogan. Apparently, Bush doesn't seem to like many of the group's proposals. There are 79 of them. He actually called them sort of impractical and unrealistic, many of the key proposals. But he did like the slogan, the new way forward, and that's what he plans to call his plan for Iraq. Which is that we all know it's stay the course. Of course, they don't call it stay the course anymore, but that's all George Bush has for us. Iraq is a tremendous success for George Bush and his cronies because they are milking our treasury dry. They're borrowing money from the Chinese, depositing it into our Federal Reserve, and milking it out of there and sending it out through a group of war profiteers, not the least amongst them is Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and Root. Of course, there's CACI and Titan. There's Aegis Defense Services. There's Bechtel, George Shultz, you all remember him, from the Reagan administration. Custer Battles, of course, is on that list. General Dynamics. NOR, USA Limited, all these amazing companies. Chevron, ExxonMobil, of course, all the great oil companies, keeping that Iraqi oil in the ground, driving up their profits. I don't know about where you are, but gas prices have gone up about 35 cents here in the valley since the election. Just in three short weeks, we're paying more for gasoline again. $2.35 I paid for unleaded gasoline this morning. And it was down to about $2.05 the day of the election. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? In just a month's time, gas has gone up by 30 cents. Who could have predicted such a thing? Hey, there's a new voice on the internet. Tom DeLay started his own blog, launched his own blog, and you can find it at www.tomdelay.com, entering the world of the internets. Mr. DeLay has decided to join the 21st century. Quite fascinating, and I went there, checked it out, and interestingly enough, you can leave a comment. He posts different articles, different, of course, you know, it's your typical sort of left-wing hating stuff, but you can, express your opinions, and it's sort of open. You can comment on DeLay's blog. It's, quite remarkable. I recommend, all of you out there in range of my voice, get out there and check it out. Go let Tom DeLay know what you think of his blog. Hey, let's go back to the telephones. We have Terry, right here in Phoenix on the line. Terry, welcome to the program.
Yeah, for the listeners around the country, you know, the Bush administration says we can't leave, and everybody else says we can't stay. So the question is, since we can't leave and we can't stay, what can we do?
Mm-hmm.
And here is the answer. As a matter of fact, it's partially being answered now because I understand that Hannity's over there. Is we give people like Hannity and the other people who support this war a gun and just leave them there in the green zone and say, you can fight for whatever you think we ought to be fighting for in Iraq, and we'll bring the troops home, and we'll just leave the supporters of the Iraq war you know, in this country, those few that are left, because mm-hmm. There's not too many of them left, but those that there are, we'll just ship them over to the green zone, and then we won't have to worry about abandoning Iraq, because there'll be people there.
Who really believe in it.
that's correct, and you won't be trying to call them home too soon, and they can just stay there. And like I say, Rush Imbecile and all the right-wing talk show hosts and the few right-wingers who are still supporting that war, and the Bush twins.
Mm-hmm. And all those chicken hawks who missed out on Vietnam, now's their chance to prove their mettle, right?
Yeah, and by the way, on your bumper music, if you can find Country Joe McDonald's anti-war rag, that's a perfect song for the Iraq war.
Yeah, no kidding.
And but that would be the solution. So if anybody says, what can we do since we can't leave, just tell them, well, anyway, if you support the war, we want to send you over there, we'll give you a gun, some ammunition, and you go over to the green zone, and we'll bring the troops home, and that's the solution. Then you won't have to worry about us abandoning Iraq.
Hey, Terry, you ever hear of that group called Operation Yellow Elephant?
Is that the one where they go to young Republican meetings and ask them to sign up?
Yep. They come there with directions to the Army Recruiter's Office and encourage these college Republicans and these young supporters of the war to actually don the uniform and go defend the cause they so greatly defend and care about. So.
Well, you know, it's like what Bush says when they ask why his kids weren't over there serving in Iraq. He said, well, heck, I didn't serve in the Vietnam. Why should my kids serve in Iraq? That's the job of the poor and the minorities.
Yeah,
my kids' job is to benefit and enjoy their sacrifice.
We had a tour drive yesterday, actually, for some of the soldiers over there in Iraq. And one of our salespeople, actually the head of our sales department, Kim, said she was out shopping, and she was in one of these dollar stores. And just for the heck of it, decided to see what they had in the toy department. It was almost all military-related toys. Toy soldiers, toy guns. That's right. That's what they sell in the dollar store. That's what the poor kids are getting for Christmas.
Well, like I say, they need volunteers desperately, because it's find harder and harder to find people desperate enough to go over there and get blown mm-hmm. up, so Halliburton can make a large profit and their stocks go up. So, you know, it's getting hard. Oh, by the way, I noticed since the election, a lot of people have given up on, they think the war's already over with, and it's not. And we still need people putting up across the country, end the war signs and stop the mm-hmm. war, to remind the politicians, because it's going to be the people, like say, who get us out of Iraq, because the politicians are too scared to get us out. So the people are going to have to lead. And the politicians will eventually follow, dragging and screaming, but they will. But we can't give up right now and say, oh, well, the Democrats won the election, the war is over. The war isn't over, and we still need people around the country to keep putting up their stop the war signs and letting the politicians know that, you know, and I understand that the most scared people that the war will be going on in 2008 are Republicans running for office, but nonetheless, we still have to keep the pressure even on them and keep reminding what's going to happen to them if the war's going on in 2008 rolls around.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you make an excellent point. Just because we won the election doesn't mean we got everything we want. We're going to have to hold Democrats and Republicans alike. We've got to hold them accountable.
I think we'll have to hold the Democrats more. The Republicans won't be so hard because they're scared to death. They're the ones who want us out of Iraq more than the Democrats do.
Yeah, we're seeing lots and lots more of them breaking from the administration.
That one from Oregon.
Gordon Smith, yeah. Yep, exactly. Following in the footsteps of Mark Hatfield. Hey, thanks a lot, Terry. Always good talking to you, brother. Take care. Yeah, you know, Gordon Smith, Terry mentioned that on the way out. Gordon Smith was on the talk shows over the weekend. He was back at it again today. He was on with Wolf Blitzer. Following the tradition, I don't know if many of you remember back to the Vietnam era, there was a Republican senator from Oregon named Mark Hatfield, and was one of the first to break ranks with the Nixon administration and push for an end to the war and actually call for to end the funding for the war of Iraq. So following that proud tradition of independent Oregonians, You know, Gordon Smith, senator from Oregon, has stepped up, and we'll have some clips of him later on in the program. Hey, I just heard from Ian. When we get back, we're going to have Cindy Sheehan on the phone. We finally made connection with her. Looking forward to talking to Cindy on the other side of the break. We'll be right back. It's the Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. We got lots more fun for you. I also want to hear from you. The phone lines are open, folks. This is your soapbox tonight. Anything you want to talk about, I'm all ears. I'd love to engage with you. We'll be right back.
This is Jeff Farias, live on the Nova M Radio Network.
Freedom's name is mighty sweet, and soon we're gonna make. Keep your eyes on the prize, I hold on. I got my hand on the gospel plow, won't take nothing from my journey now. Keep your eyes on the prize, I hold on. Hold on.
We are back. It's the Mike Malloy Show. My name's Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike while he recovers from nasty respiratory flu. Join the conversation this evening, 1-800-989-1480. That's the phone number. We're streaming at www.novamradio.com. Coming to you tonight from Phoenix, Arizona, the flagship station of the Nova M Radio Network. And I'm honored to have as a guest on the phone with us, joining us now from New York City, Cindy Sheehan. Cindy, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Good to talk to you. So you were in New York City. You're involved in a court case.
Yeah, I'm still there. We just got, after 6 days, we just got our verdict this morning.
Yes, I read in all the wires. It's kind of interesting because most of the wires are reporting a peace mom, Cindy Sheehan, convicted of trespassing in New York, and that was the lesser of the charges you were facing. Isn't that correct? There were
exactly. We were charged with two counts of disorderly conduct, one count of resisting arrest, and one count of obstructing governmental administration. And so we were acquitted of those charges, and interestingly enough, only convicted of the one that we were arrested on, which was trespassing, which is just a ticket. It's just like a desk appearance ticket. We should have been given a citation and let go on March 6th as soon as we got to the station. But quoting the lieutenant who was in charge that night, he got notice from higher up that we were being charged with resisting arrest and we couldn't be let go. So we spent a night in jail, 6 days here in New York City on trial. And I think it's only because of who we are and what our message was, and that was to stop the war. And today, after we left court, we went to the U.S. mission to the U.N. and delivered the petition, and they took it. So
I just wanted to back up. This was dating back from March. You and Medea Benjamin and a group of about 100 women, is that correct, from the Global Exchange?
Well, it was all women from all kinds of organizations, Code Pink, Global Exchange. There were women from World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime. There were five women from Iraq. There were actually a few men, too, from Veterans for Peace and Iraq Veterans Against the War. So, yeah, we tried to deliver a petition to the U.S. mission to the U.N., and because I was there, and that's what Peggy Carey said, who's John Kerry's sister, she said when she heard I was there, she turned off her cell phone, and they refused to take the petition from us.
Wow. That's just incredible. So you eventually got arrested because they refused. Now, my understanding is that they accept petitions almost all the time.
Right.
But for some reason, your presence sort of made it a hot button, and they decided to make you wait outside and test your resolve, and by golly, they were testing the wrong woman, I guess.
Exactly. And so anyway, we were arrested, charged. We spent the night in the Tombs in New York City, which is not a pleasant place to be, especially if you haven't done anything wrong. And, you know, even if you have done something wrong, it's a horrible place. But, and like I said, 6 days in court in New York City, a jury of six people wasted their time, wasted our time,
right.
Wasted our lawyers' time, and really wasted a lot of money that from the taxpayers of New York.
Mm-hmm. Right. Over a silly incident. What are you up to next? Where are you going from once you leave New York?
Well, I'm going to just do a few things. Between now and the end of the year. But on New Year's, Gold Star Families for Peace, my organization with Code Pink and After Downing Street Coalition and the World Can't Wait, we're going to Washington, D.C. on the 3rd and 4th when Congress goes back into session.
Mm-hmm.
And we're basically telling them that, you know, we didn't so much vote for you as we voted against George Bush and his war. We voted against the Republicans, we voted against their policies, and we voted for change, and we want our representatives to be that change that we've been working so hard for, and we're going to be walking up and down the halls of Congress to tell Nancy Pelosi and the rest of the gang up there what we want on the table. You know, we know that gone are the days where we're going to let the people who work for us at the table, and we're going to go down there and tell them what we want.
Right. Now, you've been tied up in this court case for 6 days. Have you been following very much with the Baker-Hamilton report? Have you seen much of what's going on with that?
It's been really hard, too, because we're in court all day, and then I have things to catch up with all night.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of things happened while we were in court. 25 soldiers were killed.
Yeah, it's
actually
getting worse and worse.
That up to 28 because 3 more were killed today.
Wow.
And the Baker Hamilton report came out. John Bolton resigned, interestingly, on the day that our court case started. And here we've been, you know, stuck in court on just, you know, charges that were trumped up, that were only there because of who we are.
Right.
So I think, you know, they want us to be tied up. They want us to be fighting this stuff instead of fighting against the war and struggling for peace. So anyway, I think that the Baker-Hamilton report, from what I've seen, is just, you know, I know it said that what was going on in Iraq wasn't right, but it basically is just stay the course.
Right. Yeah. Although a slightly slower course, but yeah, it just seems like my impression was that it just, you know, they're trying to give, obviously it was pretty critical of the way things are going, but didn't really offer, you know, very much in terms of ending this thing anytime soon, unfortunately.
Right.
And privatizing the oil, I think, was one of the main things that came out of it. And
it
certainly helps their business interests, but not necessarily.
Absolutely.
Much for their business. Cindy, thank you so much. You must be exhausted. Get some rest. And thanks again for all the work you do. And we'll hope to see you out in Phoenix again sometime soon.
Well, it was great talking to you, and I hope I get to talk to you soon.
You sure will. Thanks a lot, Cindy.
Thank you.
Take care. Cindy Sheehan, I don't know if any of you have had the pleasure enough to be in the room with Cindy or hear her speak in person. It's an experience you will not soon forget. She was just here about a month ago. Probably a little more than a month ago, probably about 2 months ago for an end the war rally, and it was just phenomenal. So, hey, it's the Mike Molloy Show. I'm Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike while he recovers from a nasty respiratory flu. 1-800-989-1480, that's the phone number. We got Tom in Kansas City as soon as we get back.
You're listening to Jeff Farias, live on the Nova M Radio Network.
Now the frozen gambler, he was very bored, trying to create a next world war. He found a promoter who nearly fell off the floor. He said, I've never engaged in this kind of thing before, but yes, I think it can be very easily done. We'll just put some bleachers out in the sun and have it on Highway 61.
Ah, yes, the business of war. We are back with the Mike Molloy Show right here on Nova M Radio Network. 1-800-989-1480. That's the phone number. Give us a call. This is your soapbox tonight. Anything you want to say, I'm all ears. I'd love to hear what's on your mind. What are our priorities? The last 6 years, the Bush administration has laid to waste this great land of America. And we get it. We've took the first step. We got took over the Congress. The Democrats have the Congress back. Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid leading those respective bodies. What are the priorities? What do we want to do? Let's get right back to the phones. Tom in Kansas City has been holding quite a while. Tom, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. I'm listening online tonight and like your show very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I heard Sarge talking earlier about this TV station in Mississippi, and he's thinking about reporting him to the FCC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got a FCC horror story of my own that I could pass along, and hopefully it would help in some way, so maybe he has a better understanding of what's involved.
Sure, yeah, please do.
If he does complain. Okay, going back to in California, back when Stanley Tookie Williams, the guy on death row.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
You remember that? Yeah.
Yeah, he was just executed, I don't know, was it 6 months ago or so, or maybe more?
Yeah, roughly, yeah. Yeah, but at that time, there's a well-known station in L.A., I won't say the call letters, but their afternoon drive guys at the time had a Let's Kill Stanley Tookie Williams Day.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were just running it on the air and trying naturally to get all the mileage they could out of it. It's a, you know, well-known neocon station in that market, and they were getting all kinds of reaction to it. And naturally, like a lot of other people, I thought it was a very, you know, horrible thing that they were doing. And just to, so you know, I've worked in media for a long time, radio, television, newspapers, so I have an idea of how the complaint process works in many ways. So mm-hmm. what I did was I tracked them down, and I got their email address for the station. And I know that if you send email to them or mail or something, it goes into their public file, which they basically have to keep track of. And then when license renewal time comes around, the FCC is supposed to look at it and, you know, make their judgment partly based on that. So what I did was I sent them an email, and I wasn't nasty about it, but I got my point across in complaining, and then I got a response from some, you know, assistant manager or something saying, thank you for writing, or, you know, thanks very much. And Bob and Dave, or whatever the hell their names were, are not racist, blah, 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 you know, but thank you for your concern. And then I thought, okay, the next step is to go to the FCC. So I went to their website and I found a place to file a complaint. I sent an email to them. And then what happens in this case is they sent me an email back and they gave me basically a case number. And they said, if you want to pursue this complaint, please call this number and talk to this person in our complaint section. So I called back and I talked to this lady. I can't remember her name now, but I explained the situation to her and I said, well, I think that what these guys did was a very despicable, rotten thing, and I'd like to pursue a complaint against them. She said, well, you can't do that. Well, what do you mean I can't do that? Well, it's free speech. So there's legally nothing we can do, but these guys were saying, let's kill this African-American guy who was convicted of murder, but at that time there was evidence that could have possibly, you know, stopped his execution.
Mm-hmm.
But to her, it was just like, well, it's free speech, and they can do and say whatever they want, so, you know, again, it's a complete waste of our time
wow.
to pursue it. And I thought, okay, so if I get on the air and I said, let's have a Kill Bush Day, you know, I'm not saying let's kill Bush, just so people understand that, of course. But if I did say that, naturally the Secret Service, the FBI, would track me down and I'd be arrested. And, you know, legally now I could be, you know, detained as an enemy combatant or a potential terrorist and tortured or whatever. So it's like that would happen to me. But these guys, because they have the money and the powerful legal staff of this giant corporation that happens to own this particular station, they can hide behind that and do whatever they want. And then if somebody complains about it, they could say, well, you know, go ahead, you know.
Right. It's just free speech. You should have included a picture of Janet Jackson's left breast maybe in your complaint. That might have gotten
their
attention.
Yeah, maybe so. But it just really bugged me, especially when the general manager, he was doing TV interviews about it, and if you really listen to what he was saying, the indirect message that kept coming through was, it's like, you know, you don't have the time, the money, and the power to oppose us. Nobody's going to do that.
Right.
You know, and just with that, and just with, you know, the other stuff that's going on with Iraq and everything, it's just, that just came to mind. So with Sarge, I'm not saying, obviously, don't complain. Yes, complain, but just be aware of how frustrating it could become.
Right, right. You got a lot of obstacles and a lot of red tape waiting for you on the other end of the complaint there. So, wow.
Yeah. So, but, you know, I mean, definitely, I agree. I mean, he definitely should pursue it because it also seems strange to me, too, that some people protest naturally, like Cindy Hughes or Al Sharpton, and a lot of people do it, but then other people who say they oppose Iraq and what's going on there, they're not willing to take the next step. They're not willing to say, this directly affects me, I'm going to go march in the streets and I'm going to, you know, do what's necessary to bring about a change.
Right. Well, I think that's a big problem with this war, and I think part of it has to do with the all-volunteer army. Now, I'm not advocating the draft necessarily, but the notion that we have this all-volunteer army, this war affects so few people. So few people are really bearing the cost of this war, and I think that's a part of it. It's hard to get people motivated and out in the streets when it really, you know, other than what they see on the TV, which it's just as easy to change the channel and watch American Idol instead, you know, most people just are not affected by Iraq, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, but just with me, I mean, very briefly, I've lived abroad for a long time. I lived in the UK for a while, and then I lived in Japan for about 10 years, and in those places and in other places, I've been around protests of usually like, you know, 500, 1,000 people, sometimes more, protesting about various government policies in that area or whatever. And the key thing was, number one, these people were not advocating, yes, let's go out and kill people and blow up buildings and do all kinds of horrible stuff. But the point was is that in that situation, those people, different culture and language in many cases, but the same thing in the sense that they knew that they couldn't just sit back and worry about, you know, am I going to get my PlayStation for Christmas or whatever?
Yeah, we are easily distracted people. Tom, thanks a lot for your call. I got somebody holding in from Germany, so I'm going to jump on that before the next break. Really great talking to you tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go to Brad in Germany. Brad, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call quickly there, Jeff. It's 4:15 in the morning here, but you're
a night owl.
The guy that called in about Kucinich kind of got me. I was kind of laying awake listening to you guys anyway. But real quick, Dennis Kucinich has on the Huffington Post a four-part thing on how to end the war. Huh? And there is, and in that, he talks about a court case in which they tried to end, I believe, is the Vietnam War, or it was the thing in Bosnia.
Right.
And they sued. And the reason that they lost the case was because Congress had continued to provide funding for the war. And Kucinich, his premise is, in January, when the next vote for the funding for the war comes up, Congress should vote it down. Now, this doesn't leave the troops in the field without any money, because there's also something that was created in the early 2000s called a bridge fund, which is currently about $70 million, which could continue to fund the troops in the field for at least another 6 months.
Right.
So Mr. Kucinich's idea is, hey, we cut off the funds right now. And all these guys that say that they're against the war, all these Democrats that are against the war, They voted for the last one, I think, according to Kucinich's article again, like 100-0. So they, you know, I guess that was in the Senate.
Right, yeah. Well, I think they were all afraid of what happened to Max Cleland. Still, 4 years later, Max Cleland voted against the first $87 billion that was going over to the Iraq War, and was basically compared to Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden because of it, that he was leaving our, and you know that, I know it, we have that extra $70 million to hold them over there, but you know the way it's going to be spun is that these people are leaving the troops out there high and dry.
Well, I think now that perhaps that the conditions are a little bit better, that these people won't be able to spend things because 60% of the people want us out now,
right.
And there's many more of us, I think, as many would like to see these people impeached and to even say, oh, we're taking that off the table and all that sort of thing. Fine, they could take it all off the table. Just stop the war. Right. That's what we voted for. And Kucinich is the only one out there that that I have seen that's really come up with something, at least from my read of it, that that would work.
Right.
And you know, if in fact come June, when most of that 70 million or 70 billion or whatever it is would be spent, then well, then I guess they'd have to come up with something if we still had troops in the field. But I think that this would be a very, very strong signal that we don't care what the Iraq Study Group says, which is just, you know, stay the course in 79 parts, that we don't care what Bush says. We're cutting off the money. That's what we voted to do.
I think another plan, if Kucinich's plan, stop the contracting. Get the private contractors out of Iraq. Stop
Absolutely.
The flow of money to the Republican campaign contributors, and then there's no more reason for them to be in Iraq. There's no more
He
war.
Addresses that also.
Yeah. That's a war
in his four-part thing. So it's in the Huffington Post, yeah. And if anybody that hasn't read it out there that's listening, I would strongly recommend that they go and read Mr. Kucinich's four-part solution for ending the war. And Jeff, thanks for sitting in for Mike tonight.
Thanks
and,
a lot, Brad.
Thanks for taking my call, and I'm going back to bed.
Go get some sleep. Hey, if you haven't seen it, see Greenwald's Iraq for Sale film. Lays out the whole case of the Iraqi war profiteers. Thanks a lot, Brad.
I have seen it. I saw it on PBS Blog, which is another website that I got from the Mike Malloy Show.
All right, great. Hey, thanks,
I do
buddy.
Everything streaming here.
Get some rest, buddy. Take care.
Thanks, sir.
All right. Bye. Hey, it's the Mike Malloy Show. When we get back, Vicky in Idaho is holding on the line. We'll get right to your call, Vicky, right on the other side of the break. I'm Jeff Farias sitting in for Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Jeff Farias, live on the Nova M Radio Network.
Back. It's the Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. My name is Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike Malloy while he recovers from a nasty, nasty respiratory flu kind of deal. 1-800-989-1480. That's the phone number. We're streaming on the Nova on www.novamradio.com. The phone lines are open, folks. Whatever's on your mind, I'd love to hear from you tonight. Any topic. You want to talk about the Iraq War? I kind of want to focus on what our priority should be as a Democratic Party or as a new majority in Congress. What do we need to do to take care of this? Let's go to Vicky in Idaho, who's been holding very patiently. Vicky, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you. The topic that I'd like to talk about is the North American Union.
Mm-hmm.
And that ties into free trade, which really isn't free trade,
right.
But that's the way that they've been doing this. And I've researched this North American Union business, even before 1983. But for anybody that's interested in researching it, they can start out by looking at the La Paz Agreement. And what the La Paz Agreement did was to establish an international area defined on the border that was to be overseen by somebody in the EPA.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was to coordinate on border issues as it pertains to the environment. But the agreement was written so loosely that they basically allowed them to expand into other areas beyond the environment and to invite in other groups besides the government working groups, including international groups, Plus, they gave them the means to get their own financing through private financing, private funding. And that's how David Rockefeller has had the influence in over the whole thing.
Right, right. Huh.
So,
you know, I'm going to actually, I'm just starting to scratch the surface on this topic myself. I'm going to, I do a show on Saturday afternoons here in Phoenix, and that is actually my topic for this Saturday. I'm going to be looking at the whole North American Union. Have you heard anything about the Amero? Have you?
Yeah. Well,
what have you learned about that so far?
Well, I've posted all this stuff on my website. If you want to go look at my website.
Sure, yeah, please do.
It's www.channelingreality.com. Mm-hmm. And just scroll down till you see North American Union. It's a hyperlink. And I have links on there about the Amero, both just regular articles, but also articles written by scholars. I've got one out there that was written by somebody from the Federal Reserve Bank in Atlanta, I think.
Hey,
it was.
Vicki, can I hold you over? I got to go to a hard break.
Sure.
All right,
we'll
be right back.
I look around and all I see are politicians on the tick. I look at me, I am the same, but I don't notice. And I have learned that everybody has a price tag on his head. So it's money that will make the monkey dance. Yes, it's money that will make the monkey dance. And yes, and it's money that will make the monkey dance. Yes, it's money that will make the monkey dance.
We are back. It's the Mike Malloy Show. Right here on Nova M Radio Network, 1-800-989-1480. That's the phone number. We are streaming at www.novamradio.com. Let me get Vicki back on the line here. Vicki.
Yeah, hi.
Hey, how you doing? I was actually checking out your website on the break. Lots of great stuff on there. Hey, I didn't see a contact page, though. I wondered if I give you my email, will you drop me a line? I might want to pick your brain a little bit in preparation for this weekend show on the North American Union.
Sure, you bet.
My email is just first initial, last name, so it's jfarias@novamradio.com. Just drop me a quick line on that. Yeah, the Amero, I find pretty fascinating. There's some folks here in Arizona are getting pretty worked up about it as well. Mostly sort of the libertarians are the ones that are kind of leading the charge here about the Amero and all that sort of stuff. So I'm going to have some of the local folks on discussing what they've discovered as well. So.
Well, everybody should be getting worked up about it because they're doing this in stealth mode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would be different if they approached it in a direct and straightforward way and said to the American people, do you want to do this? But we're not the only ones that are upset. The Canadians are upset too. A lot of Canadians. They don't want this merger either.
Well, the first I heard about it was there was some sort of plan for a super highway that runs right through the middle of the United States, connecting Mexico to Canada, and it's supposed to be, you know, it was described as this big 12-lane super highway that was going to be used to ship all the goods and unite the continent. So it's pretty scary stuff.
Well, actually, that's the most visible part of what they're doing, but there is a whole lot going on behind the scenes to harmonize our laws. That's what the working groups are about.
Mm-hmm.
It's about harmonization.
Right.
And so when you look at that, the International Highway Plan, and there's about 4 or 5 major routes. It's not just the Trans-Texas Corridor. There's the Canamex Corridor. And then if you look up into Canada, they have a couple of shipping routes that go from their ports on their west coast down into Chicago is where they show them ending. But if you look at their map, you see the cities that they have as being the main cities on there, they link right up with the Canamex and the Trans-Texas Corridor. And,
mm-hmm.
You
wow.
know, it's a whole system of transportation for international trade. I mean, they'll be just totally, breaking up our country.
Right, right.
And It's really a very serious thing. It's not.
Well, I hope it's something that starts appearing on more people's radar screens, and I'm glad you called us today to bring it up. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks
all right,
a lot.
I'll send you an email.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
Okay. Bye bye.
A couple new polls out that I want to touch on today. One of which, a Zogby poll, came out, which has Bush at a 30% job approval rating, a new low, 30%. I can smell 20s. I can smell the 20s just around the corner, folks. As Bush starts, after the holidays and Bush starts warming up that veto pen, I think those numbers are just going to plunge even more. When you get specifically into Iraq, I'm looking at a CBS News poll that just came out this evening. Bush's job handling Iraq, 75% disapprove. 75% of Americans disapprove of the job George Bush is doing in Iraq. That's up from 67% just a month ago. Folks, I don't know what more the Democrats in Congress need bring an abrupt end to this thing. But if you got 75% of the American public wanting a change and disapproving of the way this thing has been handled, you ain't going to get much more of a mandate than that, folks. 75%. Only 8% of Americans think the situation in Iraq is getting better. 8%. 52 think it's getting worse. 38% think it's staying the same. So basically 90%. Of Americans believe it's either staying the same, which is horrible, or getting worse. Will the U.S. succeed in Iraq? 9% think that's very likely. 34% think that's somewhat likely. Not very likely at all. 53%. The numbers are just staggering. This is incredible, folks. 9%? Remarkable. People are waking up. It seems like the folks in Washington are the last ones to know. The folks sort of inside the beltway, as they say, seem to be the last ones who are aware of what's going on in Iraq and how the country feels about it. So it's up to all of us to make sure we let them know. Go online, find your congressman. You have one congressman, you have two senators, three people. Send them a postcard once a week. You know, take 5-10 minutes on a Sunday. Send them a postcard. Let them know. It can be very simple. Just get out of Iraq. Let them know how you feel. This is a representative government, and they will react. Believe me, they will. All kinds of plans out there floating. You know, Biden's got a plan to try and split up the country. All of these plans, any plan that involves a lot of U.S. troops on the ground is a plan I'm against, essentially. They're basically targets. They're referees in a civil war where we don't speak the language. You don't really know the difference between the Sunni and the Shia. We have no business being there, and it's time to bring these fellas home and these gals home right now. Even the neocons are abandoning this thing. I'm going to play a clip from Ken Edelman, one of the leading neocons, one of the architects of the PNAC documents. And now he's pretty much jumped ship with the Bushes, and here's his comments about the Baker-Hamilton report.
This Iraqi report gives an example, Tim, that just breaks your heart. In the 1,000-person U.S. embassy in Baghdad today, there are six people who speak fluent Arabic. Now, this is not Chaluba. This is not, you know, an obscure language. This is one of the great languages of the world. And out of 1,000, we don't have any more than 6 people who can speak the language where they are. How can the president hear that? How can anybody in the U.S. government hear that and not be totally ashamed by the unseriousness of this effort? It also makes the point that in the Defense Intelligence Agency, less than 10 analysts have been looking at this insurgency for 2 years or so. Less than 10. And this is what's killing 100 Americans a month and 100 Iraqis a day.
Now, that's no, that's no liberal. That's Ken Edelman. He's the senior director of some neocon think tank. They all blend in. The names of them all blend in. I didn't even write it down. I don't care. Tell you the truth. 6 translators. 6 people who can speak the language. Now, how many translators were let go from the military in the last 5 years because of their sexual preference? The number's in the thousands. And we only got 6 over there who, in that consulate can speak the language? That's just unforgivable. Absolutely unforgivable. Hey, let's get back to the phones. Bill in Phoenix. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, brother, how you doing?
I'm all right. We're a representative democracy in an engineered society.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
I don't know. It's not working so well, as far as I can tell.
You know, it just, ever since habeas corpus left us,
mm-hmm.
and I drive around with my little sign and people say something to me, and I ask them, do you know you don't have habeas corpus anymore? They say to me, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
They've got us engineered. They've made us stupid, Jeff.
Yep, we're easily distracted. There's lots of shiny objects coming off of that screen in the corner.
But they're doing it deliberately.
Yeah.
How much longer? How very much longer before we're in the streets? What's it going to take? A draft. That's
yep.
the answer.
Yeah. I'm afraid you might be right. That might be one. That would one way to wake up the youth in America. That's for sure.
But then I hear the impeachment cry growing too.
Mm-hmm.
At the same token, I'm encouraged that people are calling for him to be impeached, for accountability to finally come to the table. But I don't have good faith in it, Jeff. I don't see it happening.
Well, you know, I think it's a little early. I mean, I've been talking about, I've been in favor of impeachment since we started this war in Iraq. I've been saying somebody's going to get in there and stand up and talk about impeachment and talk about impeachment. I think where we're at now is we just got to get these investigations moving. Henry Waxman has to get on these war profiteers. Once these things are exposed, once these things are laid out in front of the American people, I'm not sure whose committee. I might be Conyers' committee.
Who's going to tell them? The five defense contractors that own all the media?
Nah, well, you know what? If they have these hearings, they'll be covered, and people will have to talk about them.
Who's going to cover them?
Well,
the
Biden's talking about...
The defense contractors that own the media.
Yeah, I know. Biden's talking about holding 6 days worth of hearings on Iraq.
But, Jeff,
I think Conyers is going to look at Downing Street.
It's not going to happen on the television.
Well, maybe not. I don't know. Oberman will talk about it. John Stewart will talk about it. That's where a lot of people are getting their news anyway.
You'll talk about it.
We'll talk about it here on this network, and I'm sure...
On this ever-growing little station that could network.
Yep. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it'll get out there. You know, I think the information, it takes time. I mean, it's been a frustrating time, but I think there is a light at the end of the tunnel. We are making some progress. We managed to convince enough of the American people to sort of wake up and pay attention that we're at least able to take care of, you know, taking back the House and taking back the Senate.
Or are we an engineered society?
I don't know.
I often wonder.
I hope not. I hope there's a way around it. I really do. I hope we can. I hope American. I felt like when I woke up on November 8th, I felt like America is starting to wake up from its slumber.
I think we're all encouraged, and I think there's good reason to be encouraged. Somebody had to show us the bad, or how will we know what the good is?
Yeah, it's a good point, Bill.
Take good care, my
friend. Love you, brother. Take care.
Bye bye.
Hey, it's the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Jeff Ferry, sitting in for Mike while he's recovering from some nasty flu. 1-800-989-1480 is the phone number. We got my good friend Leonard on hold. A couple more calls coming in. This is just your soapbox today, folks. I'm going to take as many calls as I possibly can squeeze in to the next hour and 50 minutes, but I'm depending on you. Let's keep this conversation going. Let's have some fun here tonight. We'll be right back after these important messages.
This is Jeff Ferrius, live on the Nova M Radio Network.
That's trippy,
ain't
it?
Oh,
I got a reverb on me, too. People go. That was crazy. That was cool, man. Let's do every show like that. No. Don't worry about it. Ian's getting all worked up. Oh, I'm sorry. No, man, that was fun. I feel great. Actually, I feel great. I got a full boat of callers here. I'm ready to talk to you folks. I am thrilled. Keep the calls coming in. First up is Leonard in Glendale. Leonard, welcome to the program.
Hey, Jeff. It sure is good to be able to hear you on the air at night. I hope Mr. Malloy is getting better over there, but I'm sure...
Me too. He'll be back with us soon.
They couldn't have found a better person to do the show.
Well, that's very kind of
you. Well, I wanted to bring up... What I wanted to bring up was... the Arizona connection and all of the states that are in the United States connection to perpetuating this lie and this shameless, continuing of soldiers' deaths in Iraq. And basically, you know, even though I was in the Army, I was in the Guard for a long time, and there is a lot of murkiness. There's the National Guard Bureau, okay? The governors, you know, basically supply a lot of the, now we're supplying a huge amount of the manpower over in Iraq.
Right.
As you know, in Arizona, we just had a large, or we're going to have, it's just been announced in the news, a large deployment of 400 to 500 people, the largest since 9/11. Well, what I'm getting at is, you know, not just isolating Arizona, but if you focus in on Arizona alone, several weeks ago, you know, the Arizona Republic had a huge thing on military contractors' defense spending in Arizona, how it's just going like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm getting at is the governors of each state basically I think there's a little quid pro quo going on here. You can defend them and say, whether they're Democratic or Republican, and say, well, if they don't supply this, the federal government will not supply us highway funding. But mm-hmm. I think the governors, I'm not going to mention any, I'm just going to say governors across this country are too complying. In fact, much too complying with King Bush. They talk a tough talk, some of them. But yet, as soon as the National Guard Bureau calls for it, mm-hmm. you know, our state, Arizona, I'm not against Afghanistan, but by sending all of the soldiers to Afghanistan, we're easing it on Bush to send more people to Iraq. So what I want is, you know, people are saying, what can we do now? Well, let's, like you said, get the under DFR, Dingell, Frank, and Rangel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when they take over, well, let's see. I'm willing to give them a chance on that. But the governors across the country, you know, I'm hoping somebody out there, I'm going to start doing some research on it myself. Why is it that we have to necessarily send state militias? No declared war has been, you know, I mean, they've got a resolution, but there's no declared war. Why do we
right.
keep perpetuating it? And Arizona has a huge military-industrial complex, and people basically to find the jobs that they need. I know many soldiers, and the reason they're doing it, of course they love their country, but they have families, and this is one of the only ways because of
right.
the job situation. So,
Well, Leonard, I'll tell you, I don't know if you've ever seen the film Why We Fight by Eugene Jarecki. There's a segment in the film where they talk about the way the military-industrial complex works, and it's actually quite ingenious. There's a part, like for instance, the B-1 bomber. There's a piece of the B-1 bomber that is made in every single state in the USA.
Makes
at least one piece of it. So almost every congressman has some indebted to the Pentagon in order to keep jobs in his district. And that's how they maintain control like this, and that's how they get cooperation
of
the states
these,
and these governors, because it's real jobs and real money coming into their states.
And also a lot of the officers, like I'm looking in my 2006 almanac, I'm going to have to go out by the 2007, there are 36 four-star generals, according to 2006 almanac.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hundreds and hundreds of brigadiers and major generals. And basically, these men, a lot of them, they go to work immediately for corporations,
right.
a lot of them, as soon as they retire. So
they go to work for the defense contractors, and then they're connected to everyone. All of their subordinates who used to work for them are now their clients on the other side of the aisle.
And I guess what I'm saying is, which is not going to make me popular in my own party, is our precinct committee people across not only Arizona but all of the states in this country needs to turn a very sharp focus spotlight. If they don't produce in Congress, we need to start turning a spotlight on our politicians and exactly who they're getting their money from, even though I know we've been saying this. I want to say, okay, this guy's a Democrat, but yet, you know, this huge military-industrial complex corporation is giving this person this much money. And we need to, you know, Kucinich, okay, I feel that what are his chances of winning as president? I don't think they're that great. But you know what? I admire the fact that here he is coming out and taking the stand. I'm not happy with Hillary. And I like Mr. Obama, but I'm a little bit nervous about the cult of personality, but
right.
I think he's a good guy. So I think that the airwaves here in Arizona and across your whole Nova network are growing, and these people that are, the advertisers are going to start realizing that, you know, a lot of people are now tuning into you, and I hope I can get a T-shirt from you. And when I ride the bus every day, it's amazing how many people don't even know about Harley Air America or your station, and I need to do something. I need to get the shirt on, and I need to have some cards.
Hey, Leonard, I'll buy you a T-shirt, buddy. Just come on by the station. I'll make sure you get a T-shirt.
No, seriously, I will.
I'm dead serious.
Okay, yeah, you know what? I'll take you up on that, Jeff, and let's start let's start getting the word passed around here, and maybe if I can do a walk to the state capitol or something this weekend, I would like to, you know, let people know. It's not just the other station anymore peddling the hate. You've got a station where actual people are listening that want solutions and not just the other thing.
Yep.
So anyways, Jeff, thanks a lot, and keep up the good work. And Mr. Molloy, if you're listening, get better. We got to keep the bastards on their feet.
Absolutely. Leonard, always a pleasure to talk to you,
Adios,
buddy.
Sir.
We'll talk to you soon.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right. Hey, I got a one line opened up there. I got otherwise a full board of callers. Who's up next? We got Fran in Spokane. We have Mike in Woodstock, Ruth in Phoenix, Larry in Phoenix, all holding patiently. We'll get to your calls just on the other side of the break. My name is Jeff Ferris. This is the Mike Molloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. You can join the conversation at 1-800-989-1480. We are streaming at www.novamradio.com. We'll be right back on the other side. Please listen to these important messages from our sponsors.
This is Jeff Ferris, live on the Nova M Radio Network.
Back, it's the Mike Molloy Show, and I am the substitute host. That's right, a topical song. My name's Jeff Ferris, sitting in for Mike tonight on the Nova M Radio Network. I have my own show on the weekends here on Nova M here in Phoenix. It's called the Truth to Power Hour, and I got a website, www.truthtopowerhour.com. Gives you all the lowdown. I kind of post stuff up there every day, stuff I find on the web, interesting stories, sound bites. Whenever Oberman comes out with a special comment, you can be sure you can hear it over there if you missed it on his show. Again, my show airs from 2 to 5 here in Phoenix every Saturday afternoon. This Saturday we're going to be talking about the North American Union. Should be a pretty interesting topic. I'm looking forward to that. But, hey, I got a full board of callers, and I couldn't be happier about that because I love talking to you folks. Fran in Spokane, Washington is first up. Fran, welcome to the program.
Hi.
How are you?
The longer you keep me waiting, the more nervous I get.
Oh, nothing to be nervous about. We're all friends here.
Hey, Jeff, some of these guys are really smart, but this is December 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And as I recall, the Democrats are going to take over on January 4th.
Right.
I think they have almost a month to get their act together. They are not interested in impeachment. I would think they were going to do some criminal charging. And it's up there for grabs for all those guys that are going to get nailed. And why can't people see that?
Yeah, well, you know, there's already been, I saw a photograph of a shredding company showing up at Dick Cheney's Maryland home. So obviously he's scrambling to cover his backside, shall we say.
To death.
Yep.
You know, so I just think that these wimps that call in and say, ooh, 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 those Democrats, we got them in there. You know, that's what we wanted, wasn't it?
Yep.
And now we got to stand behind them. And if they don't do it in a 6 months or a year and we see them failing, we get them out. Same as we did before.
Yeah, oh, I agree. I think they will step up. I mean, Henry Waxman has been researching this stuff all along. He just hasn't had any subpoena power or any ability to even call a meeting to look at any of this stuff. So
no,
I think
we didn't have. Nobody has.
Yeah, I think
so
we're going to see a lot of things change. I really do.
On your North America Union thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know that much about that.
Me neither. I'm just learning about it, mostly because a lot of people who listen to my weekend show have been sending emails and stuff about it. And I sat down with a fellow here who's a prominent libertarian, also radio personality, at a luncheon about a week or so ago, and he started talking to me about it. I'm like, man, you got to come on the show and share
this
with
the crowd.
Well,
I'm going to look it up, but I wanted to mention, I think the United States should wake up. They, all their oil, the most oil comes from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And the second most oil comes from Mexico. And the very bottom of the whole list of 15 crude oil suppliers to the United States is Iraq.
Wow.
All you have to do is Google it.
Interesting.
And see who the most, who gives us the most oil.
Well,
they better start treating the Canadians better and Mexico better.
Well, I understand a lot of the Canadian oil is in sand, though. There's some kind of, needs some sort of, it's a little more expensive to get it out and clean it up, but there's a lot more of it than anywhere else we're dealing with.
But they're still getting it, and you're talking about Alberta oil.
Right, right.
This is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about what we've been getting since 2004 and beyond and before and now.
Wow.
They're talking about going into Alberta, which is sandy and might cost more. But you look it up. Mexico's second. Why are we getting their oil? And you'll see all the countries that provide all the oil.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think long-term, we're going to be thinking about, I mean, you know, looking at Al Gore and trying to figure out ways to get off the oil.
That would be nice.
Especially here in Arizona, we got a lot of wind and we got a lot of sun. And even, you know, I've had guests who deal in the solar industries, and they say, you know what, oil is solar energy. It's just been sitting in the ground for thousands and thousands of years. So all the energy on this planet comes from the sun. So why don't we just skip all the middlemen and figure out ways to tap the source directly?
No kidding.
Yep.
That's probably a good idea.
Yep.
Well, I admire all you educated guys, all of you. And Mike, get better.
Oh, he will be. He'll be back real soon.
I heard him. He's getting sick Friday.
Yeah. Well, I guess it took a turn for the worse over the weekend. So.
Okay. Well, we'll talk to you again, Jeff.
Thanks a lot, Fran. Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
That wasn't so bad, was it?
No, not really. I'm a little sweaty.
Okay. Don't be nervous next time. We'll have a lot of fun, okay?
Why not?
All right. Take care.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, bye.
Let's go to Larry in Phoenix. Let's keep the ball rolling. Larry, welcome to the program.
Oh, it's great to hear your show. Can you hear me okay?
I sure can.
I don't get Mike Malloy anymore. I'm always on the road, and I got XM so I could hear him, but now he switched over to Nova M.
Well, we may be, that's sort of in the works. He may be back on XM real soon. We're actually in negotiation right now. That could happen. We could have an announcement any day on that one.
That'll be great.
Yep.
I'm always the angry guy about the politics, and when I first heard Mike Malloy, I was just oh man, finally found somebody that felt the same way I did.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I hope he gets well soon. I put up signs before the election along the interstates and the state highways in Arizona, and somebody earlier on the show mentioned that we should be putting up signs, and if anybody wants to go do that, I know that the workers who go along the freeways picking up the tires and stuff,
right,
they have to remove the signs if they're on the fence that's along the government property.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put a sign on their own support, their own post, a foot or two behind that fence, then they don't have to pick it up.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, then it could last, you know, maybe a day or two or a week or 6 months or a year. Who knows?
Wow. Hey, there's a guy out there calls himself the Freeway Blogger. He's got a website, freewayblogger.com. He's turned it into an art form and has gotten quite good at it. So you ought to check out his website.
Had signs up that said, God is love and Bush is war. Which do you want more? Vote Democratic. That was before the deal. But my signs weren't lasting very long.
Right.
But we all need to keep talking to everybody we can and keep the truth to power going to the people who cannot hear Air America or Nova M.
Right.
It's something we just really got to keep doing.
Yep, and I agree. You know, something that was always, I was always on my stump saying, hey, look, they say it's not polite to talk about religion or politics, but you got to start talking to your neighbors. You got to start talking to your family members, your friends, people you know at work. A lot of people aren't aware of what's going on out there.
It might not be polite at first, but once they learn things that you know, they win. You win them over, and they want to know more, and they'll just keep pumping you for more information after a while.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I've found out there.
Because people want to know what's going on, and if you hold the truth and you hold it back, then it's just not right.
Yep. I agree. We got to share the good word, Larry. Hey, Larry, you drive safe, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Let's go to Matthew in Bedford, Texas. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Hey, I do have a bit of faith in the party, but at least in the change in the Senate. But I think I have every right to be wary. And, well, I mean, I call them my party, but they won't.
Right. Well, yeah, yeah. No, we need to be skeptical, and we need to hold them to account. Absolutely. You know, I mean, and Sirota lays it out. He says there's only really two parties. There's the money party, and there's the people party. You know, and Democrats can fall on either side of that aisle, and we have to keep a close watch on them and you know, make sure they do the things we elected them to do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even old enough to vote. I'm 17. But, I mean, it's funny because there are many people my age who are selling their souls to the Republican Party, but I look at my preference mm-hmm. and what I find to be morally acceptable, as most normal people do. But I mean, I still find myself just getting that thought in the back of my mind. Well, what happens if what happens if for some reason they do something that we all find wrong and objectionable, mm-hmm. and it's entirely possible. I mean, we see Republicans who are upset at their own party because Republicans do something wrong.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's entirely possible, and I'm not saying that it will happen, but it's entirely possible for the Democratic Party, or at least the Senate and or House, to get, I just want to say, a thought in their collective heads that the whole don't impeach him.
Right, right.
That's okay for now,
right?
Because they aren't even in yet.
Right. We got to investigate and get the information out there. Matthew, I got to tell you, you've made my night. The fact that there is a 17-year-old who is engaged in this process and listening to this station and listening to Mike Malloy gives me a lot of hope for our future. That's been one of the things that's been most distressing to me is the lack of involvement of the youth in this country today. And thank you so much for being involved and stay involved. Stay alert. Stay on top of this stuff and hold your leaders to account, buddy. And register to vote the day you can, okay?
I will. All right. I swear to you that.
Thanks a lot, Matthew.
Thank you. Bye.
Hey, it's the Mike Malloy Show. My name's Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike today while he's recovering. 1-800-989-1480 is the phone number. Looks like all the lines are filling up pretty quick, folks. We have Carolyn in Tempe, Stephen in Phoenix, Reverend Bill is on the line for us. Two more lines just coming in right now. We'll get to your calls as soon as we can, folks. Looking forward to talking to you all. I'll be right back.
Catching it all.
We are back. It's the Mike Malloy Show, 21 minutes after the hour, here on the Nova M Radio Network. 1-800-989-1480 is the phone number. We are streaming at www.novamradio.com, also at www.aaphx.com. That's the website for our radio station here in Phoenix. And, of course, novamradio.com is our network radio station. Many hats, many hats. Anyway, I'm going to get right back to the phones. I got plenty of callers waiting online, and I just want to talk to you folks. That's what this night's all about. This is your soapbox, folks, opening up the phone lines. I just want to hear what's on your mind, what our priorities should be for the 110th Congress, and how we're going to turn this thing around. First up is Carolyn in Tempe. Carolyn, welcome to the show.
Hey there, Jeff.
Hey, how are you?
I got to say, go, Matthew, go.
Yep.
I'm
yeah,
I'm
wasn't
with
that,
you.
Wasn't that great?
That is awesome.
Yep.
That is awesome. That's going to save our bacon. And
yep.
Boy, do we need it, because we don't know what's going on in our own country. I was calling because I was reading up about Pinochet, since he just died,
mm-hmm.
And came across some really interesting stuff. Of course, has anyone mentioned tonight that the U.S. helped overthrow a democratically elected president of Chile, Allende,
yeah,
and it was on 9/11?
Oh, really? I didn't
on 9/11 of 1973?
Yep.
Yeah, that's what we did. And what was so bad about him? Well, he was a democratic socialist.
Right.
But he was democratically elected.
By
and
his
I looked to see, well, what is that? What's so horrible about that? And they say that it's a broadly capitalist system with some social reforms, kind of like us in Social Security.
Right.
you know, so.
Yep. Yeah, Henry Kissinger's grubby little hands are all over that.
Oh, absolutely.
And Allende was actually assassinated, not just overthrown, but killed. So,
well,
he
died on that day. So he was assassinated, and we evidently ponied up $2 million to help that happen.
Yep.
Kissinger was, as you said, he was directly related in not just money support, but planning to have him overthrown. And he told people that hands off. When Pinochet got into power, he told our people hands off, because no matter how bad that government would be, no matter what, how bad things would be, it might do, it couldn't possibly be as bad for us as the Allende government. Now, go figure.
Yeah.
That was kind of interesting. But also, it turns out that in 2004, there was a little debate that went on, because it came out that Kissinger, did you hear about the 1976 assassination in Washington, D.C., that Pinochet's secret police pulled off when it murdered an ex-diplomat or person from the Allende government, Letelier?
Oh, you know,
and there was
an American
named Moffat who was with him, and it was a car bomb in Washington, D.C. And it turned out later, that's a terrorist attack in our own country.
Yep.
And it turned out later that Kissinger could have stopped it. He could have stopped it. He knew that they were planning on assassinations around, you know, in different countries outside of their own borders.
Right, right. Yeah, Kissinger would have had to. There's no way Pinochet's government would do something like that in this country unless they had a green light.
Of course, after having been put in power by the U.S., of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he got wind of it, but Kissinger stopped any of our people from taking any action to stop it. Now, so there was a debate about that, and for years, you know, Kissinger was saying, no, I didn't know, I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And for years, other people were suggesting, well, yeah, I think you did. But in 2004, there were some documents that were declassified, and they're over at the National Security Archives now, and it proves that he did know, and he put out, you know, a message that suggested to tell some of these other ambassadors to other countries, you know, in South America to look out or whatever, but they weren't delivered for some reason to Pinochet.
Right.
At any rate, Peter Kornbluh does the books for the National Security Archives. He goes over the documents and studies them, and then writes these briefing books.
Wow.
And so he's got one on the Pinochet file, and he wrote, it was interesting because after they had a look at these documents, Maxwell, who was on the Council of Foreign Relations, he was their South American specialist, he wrote a letter to set the record straight after Kissinger, his assistant secretary of state, had denied that they had any way of stopping this.
Hey, Caroline, I got a hard break coming up. Thanks so much for your call.
Okay.
You know, Pinochet is dead at 91. Hell just got a little bit more crowded. The most brutal dictator in this hemisphere is gone.
Heaven only knows where the brokenhearted go. Will they find peace beyond this misery? And angels up above that will fill their hearts with love, or will they cry for all eternity?
It's the Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. My name is Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike Malloy this evening while he recovers from some respiratory flu. 1-800-989-1480, that's the phone number. That gets you on the air here. We're talking about, well, whatever you want to talk about tonight. Open up the phone lines, and this is your soapbox, and I want to hear what what's on your mind tonight. Well, let's see who's up next. Reverend Bill is joining us. Reverend Bill, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Jeb.
How are you this fine evening?
Well, I'm very good. I was hoping to speak directly with Mike Malone, but did I understand that he's sick?
He is a bit under the weather, yes. He's fighting off a respiratory flu. Hopefully he'll be back in the saddle tomorrow
in
the evening.
Well, in case he's listening, I would like to speak to him directly. Mike, people of religious faith have stronger immune systems than those without and are much more resistant to things like colds and bugs and other kinds of ailments. And I myself have a very few colds, and I'm a very robust man for 65 years old. And I just beseech you, Mike, at this hallowed season to renounce your atheism and come unto the Lord.
And that's the cure to the common cold, just come to Jesus?
Well, it's not necessarily the cure, but it's a preventative, it would seem, according to the studies, Jeb. Are you a Christian man?
Well, I was raised in the Catholic Church, but I don't necessarily practice that faith anymore. I'm more of a deist, like our founders were. I believe in a God. I don't necessarily
believe that there's a God, but he is far away.
Well, yes, no, I think he
doesn't interfere in the affairs of men.
I don't necessarily believe that either. I just don't necessarily believe I need a reverend or anyone else to tell me what God is thinking. I think
he's right there
in all of us.
What I think that you and Micah Newcomb and Mike Malone believe in is that secular politics is going to solve everything, and therefore secular politics, liberal politics, is your God. That's what I think.
Well, this is a secular nation. We were founded on secular principles, and the founders put a pretty distinct wall between the church and the state, and that's how politics are supposed to be secular.
And I was speaking to Mike Newcomb today, but he could only get me on a couple of minutes toward the last, so I didn't say everything I had to say, and he was speaking about the high incarceration rate, and I was just wanting to say, well, maybe that's because we have a high crime rate, and I think it is the result of all the permissive liberal practices of the 60s.
Well, now the crime rate's gone up in the last 6 years, and we haven't had much of a liberal slant on the way this country's been going. How do you account for that, Reverend?
Well, I account for it with this metaphor, that during the 60s, this liberal attitudes and these licentious behaviors were let out of the barn, and they have not been corralled by anyone.
From the 60s, so it's been 40 years, and they still haven't been corralled.
No,
what about the 20s? You remember the roaring 20s?
Have you ever tried to capture a pig that has gotten out of the barn and goes into the wilderness and becomes a feral pig?
Oddly enough, I have.
Oh, you have?
Yes.
I grew up
on a actually it was a retired farm, but there were plenty of active farms right around where I grew up in Massachusetts, and one day a pig did escape from our neighbor's farm and ran into the wilderness behind our house.
Then you should know of all people.
It was quite an adventure, I'll tell you.
You should know of all people. And that is a metaphor for what has happened to the morals of this country. The beast of this liberal secularism has escaped, and we have not reined it in yet. And now we're bearing the fruits decades later of that, what happened in the 60s with all of that free love ends and drug taking. And these are the people that are creating, doing the crimes now, are the children of those people.
Well, Reverend Bill, we managed to capture that pig in about an hour, but you're claiming the conservatives have taken, it's been 40 years, and they still haven't been able to rein in that wild pig.
Well, I don't know what how deep your woods were, but in rural Georgia, where I raised until I was 20 years old, and I moved to Oklahoma. That is very. There were some very deep woods there, and once that pig was into the woods, well, the fact is, it took about 3 to 4 weeks. Now that's the time scale. That's nothing compared to what's going on politically in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just making a very loose comparison, a very loose metaphor there.
Well, we had about 50 acres for the pig to run, and we managed to rein him in. So, and
was it in the woods?
Well, it was actually, you know, we were a bunch of hippies, and that was the easy part.
Well, he was
lured into our decadent ways. And
it didn't have time to become truly a feral pig.
No, we got him
about
out
about a week,
quick.
We'll turn a domestic pig into a feral pig in the wild. Do you know that?
Well, I know pigs are pretty smart. Most people don't give them credit for it, but they are pretty intelligent animals, and they're probably pretty adaptable animals.
And they're very devious, like liberals are.
Reverend Bill, thanks for your insights, as always, today.
Have a good night.
You too, buddy. Let's go to Stephen in Phoenix. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jeff. I just want to give props to Cindy Sheehan earlier. Reverend Bill, most crime is due to poverty,
right,
not the 60s. I'll pray for you, brother, that Christ will wash away your judgments and to enlighten you to the truth. I want to thank you, Jeff. The fact that I can call you and talk to you on this station gives me hope, you know, for this last election. I am kind of concerned. My focus really is to wake us up from our apathy and ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
I basically feel that we are not engineered. We have been conditioned. 9/11 was the key to really the key to turning this whole thing around by exposing the true terrorists. I really feel this will help wake America up. 9/11 Mysteries is a must-see.
Oh,
so it's
so.
Why we fight.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone who hasn't seen those, I say, you know, you have to watch those. That will give you the ammunition, because most people have been like hypnotized by television.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I'm very concerned, because I feel this next summer is going to be our real true test here for what goes down. So,
hey, Stephen, we're in the planning stages right now. We're bringing a big 9/11 truth event to here to the Valley, a big nationwide event, hooking up with the 9/11 scholars from all over the country. And the weekend, it's right now tentatively scheduled for the weekend of February 23rd through 25th out at a resort in Chandler. So keep your ears to the ground.
Oh, excellent.
We'll be talking. I'm actually one of the MCs of the event, so we'll be talking about it quite a bit as it gets nearer and it gets more firmed up.
I'll be there, and Reverend Bill, Christ said, the truth shall set you free, and we need to know the truth about 9/11.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Stephen.
Thank you.
Let's go to Bruce in California. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Good evening. I was calling, I guess, one of the things that I've been thinking an awful lot about is the electronic voting machines.
Yes.
And I am very, very concerned that no matter what we do, I think that the only reason that we won, frankly, there was clearly fraud, in the 06 election, and we won simply because there were just more people that came out to vote than they could push to the side.
They depend on a really close election to be able to flip those machines without notice. But
right,
you know, there's a couple of bills out there. Rush Holt is working on something. I think it's H.R. 550, which calls for a mandatory paper ballot in all elections. And I think Feinstein's working on a similar approach for the Senate.
Well, I hope that there's a mandatory count of those paper ballots and not just as a piece of paper.
Right. Well, the whole idea, if you have the paper, then you can
so
do a recount.
You can count it. Another thing, I know you didn't want to talk about the upcoming presidential election in 08, but I just want to say kudos to Kucinich for putting his hat into the ring. The man is amazing, and I just wish that that he could get the kind of support and acknowledgement from the media and from people, you know, as far as money is concerned.
Right.
I also
think it's important for, you know, Dennis Kucinich runs. I don't know if he really thinks he's going to win the election, but he runs to force people to confront certain issues and to deal with certain issues and to actually have that stuff, to make it part of the debate. And that's how, when I was a kid growing up, that's how politics used to work. You had a platform, and the party came together, and all sides were heard, and you agreed on it. It wasn't sort of a fait accompli the way it is these days, where the nominees and the platform is decided by the mainstream media.
Well, if Dennis were to spend the next 2 years in Iowa,
mm-hmm,
and just focus nothing but Iowa for the next 2 years, and make a really strong showing there, that would make a huge difference in his potential. I mean, if he spreads himself out too thin, I don't want to go into the politics of 08, because I know that's not what you want to do.
Right.
But I mean, honestly, I think that the man is really a man whose time has come, and I am so sick of the what we call the Democratic leadership, this mm-hmm Pelosi creep.
The DLC. I don't mind Pelosi, but the DLC folks kind of.
Why don't you mind Pelosi with her taking impeachment off the table?
Well,
what the hell
I think
that,
that was a campaign issue. I think what Pelosi was saying
for
is
whom?
That,
it certainly wasn't for the Democrats.
Well, I think it was she didn't want them to use the impeachment thing as a scare tactic. And
have
I,
you?
I think, no, I think she didn't want the Republicans to use it as a scare tactic, like that they're going to try and take her out. I kind of forgive Pelosi for her stand on that. I think first you investigate, and when you put the evidence there in front of the American people,
yeah, but you don't
I
take
think,
it off the table before you investigate.
Right, right.
And you know, I don't know if you've ever seen the video of Newt Gingrich right after they won in 1994. And this guy was saying we're going to spend the next 2 years investigating Clinton and mm-hmm. You know, I mean, all this stuff it was so completely different from what the media is expecting of the Democrats.
Right.
And yet Gingrich had no qualms about coming right out and saying what he was intending to
right.
do.
Well, I hope that the investigations lead us to an impeachment, because I'm all for it.
I am too.
I think we're going to let Waxman and Conyers sort of lead the fight, and then you know, Pelosi will have no choice but to call for it. Hey, Bruce, thanks a lot for your call.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Bye.
Always good talking to you. Take care. Hey, it's the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike Malloy. 1-800-989-1480. That's the phone number. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Jeff Farias live on the Nova M Radio Network.
We are back. It's the Mike Malloy Show, the last segment of the night. Man, where did the time go? 3 hours just flies by, folks. I could stay here another 3 hours and talk to you good people. But unfortunately, I got to get home and get some sleep. I'm back on the air tomorrow morning with Dr. Mike, the Mike Newcomb Show, every morning right here in Phoenix from 7 to 10 a.m. over the stream, novamradio.com. Check it out. Mike's a great guy, a very talented radio host, and extremely funny, talented, insightful, really great show. So if you haven't heard him yet, tune in to Dr. Mike every morning here, KPHX. I'm going to get right back to the phones. I got a full board. I don't know if I'll get to all of you. If you can try and keep your comments as concise as possible, we'll try and get through as many of these calls as we can before the end of the show. Sid in Berkeley's up next. Sid, welcome to the program.
Hi. Hi, Jeff. I just wanted to say, I'm tearing it down. I believe that this whole system that the Republicans pulled on us mm-hmm. started before 9/11, and I think that they were involved in the plans for doing the airplane thing into the buildings. I really do. But you can't say that because everyone thinks you're a conspiracy theorist. But what is it but a conspiracy?
Well, one thing you can say is that the official story we've been given just doesn't add up with the science and with you know, what we've seen with our own eyes. If you've watched any of those,
I know
films
a plane cannot bring a building like that right. down. I studied architecture.
It never has before, and a fire never has brought a steel frame building down either. And
I know
three of them came down all on the same day. So
there's
a lot more questions than answers.
I hope that investigation reaches back far enough.
Yep.
Because if this is the kind of thing that we're dealing with, it's a monster. Mm-hmm. We already know it's a monster, but, you know, that they can do all that and then pretend to have that as an excuse to go and do all this, then, you know, what can
yeah.
you
say? Yeah, yeah, it's a frightening time, you know, and it's interesting. It's more the rule than the exception. If you've seen any of Alex Jones' work, he does a film out called Terror Storm, which is basically a history of false flag operations dating all the way back to the Reichstag fire and Hitler in Germany. And it's just more often than not countries attack themselves in order to start a war.
Oh, I know, yeah. So it's just whose playbook? I don't think that Pelosi was trying to let Bush out of anything. I think she just, it's a question of timing.
Right.
They do have to build a case.
Yep. The cart before the horse, exactly.
And, and this one, they're not just trying to put him away on a little fib.
Right.
They're trying to do criminal accusations, and they've got to have it right, you know.
Yeah. We have war crimes here. We have torture. We have,
the whole,
thousands upon thousands
of
lives.
We have everything.
Yep.
It's all there, and I hope that they sweep in Cheney with the lot.
Yeah, me too. I think it's all going to end up with Cheney first. I think there's probably enough plausible deniability for Bush, but I think Cheney's the real target here. He's been the real president anyway. So.
Yeah, I think so.
Yep. Hey, Sid, thanks a lot for your call, and thanks
okay.
for listening.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Lee in Oregon. Lee, welcome to the program.
Hey, I thought Ron Wyden was the first one to come up with the paper ballot plan, because I heard him talk on either Hartman's show or Franken's show, mm-hmm. and he came up with that, because that's the way we vote in Oregon. And then I was surprised to hear you say that it was Feinstein or someone else.
Well, I know there's this fellow, Rush Holt, who actually has a bill right now, H.R. 550, ready to go before the Senate. And he's been working on it actually since 04.
Oh, really?
I spoke with his office right after. I was involved in part of the black box movement right after the 04 election. And I spoke with some people in his office, and he was working on it way back then. So it's been kicking around for a while. And hopefully, you know, now that we have the ability to talk about these things on the floor of the House, that something will change real quick.
In Oregon, too, there's no voting machines or anything. It's
right.
all a mail ballot. It's
mm-hmm.
great. You get it weeks before. You can look at it, have time to go over it. You make a mistake, you have time to get another one.
Right, right.
You can mail it back registered, I guess. I never did, to make sure that they received it.
It's a
really, really good system.
It's a good system. Yeah, we actually had a similar system on the ballot here, but a lot of people were criticizing it that it was made to look like the Oregon system, but it had a lot of little tricky things in it, so it ended up failing here. But we've looked at the Oregon system quite a bit. We have paper ballots here, and they're counted by, I think, a ESNS machine or something like that. But paper's a key, just so it can be recounted, and you can get there and check it out. Hey, Lee, thanks a lot for your call, buddy.
You know, the thing, Pelosi's fighting the media. She's
right,
not fighting.
Right.
That's what she has to say that.
Exactly.
Okay, bye.
Thanks a lot, Lee. Let's go to Tracy in San Francisco. Tracy, welcome to the program.
Hi. Yeah, first of all, my husband and I would like to both wish Mike speedy recovery.
Oh, sure. We all do. We all do.
Love his show. Yeah. My husband is always telling me, Mike says what I would say. Mike says what I've been saying.
No kidding. Yeah, I've never heard anyone voice my anger better than Mike Malloy.
Oh,
so, he's pretty incredible.
Yeah, you know it.
Yep.
And my comment about Pelosi, of course, I live in her district.
Mm-hmm.
I was very angry with her, too, for a long time for not wanting to be for impeachment. I even voted for her Green opponent.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, she can't be pushing for impeachment.
Right.
If it's Cheney and Bush, and she's the Speaker of the House, she's third in line.
Right.
She cannot hungry for
it
that.
It would look like she was trying to steal the presidency. Yep.
Exactly,
yep.
And that's why she's keeping quiet.
And there are other people who are going to lead that charge, so.
Yeah, I hope she doesn't work too hard stopping them.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Tracy. Thanks
hey,
for
thank
your
you.
Call.
Bye.
Hey, we're just about winding down here. I want to say thanks to Ian. Everything you heard came through his nimble fingers, running the network and the show and the phones all at once. Did a tremendous job. Thank you very much, Ian. I want to thank Mike Malloy for letting me sit in his place. Let's hope he gets better. Let's hope he's back on the mic tomorrow night. I want to thank everybody here at KPHX. Hey,
I'd like to say a few words.
We're going to be back. I've got a little Groucho Marx to go out on. That's the only way I could think of going out. So why don't we squeeze that back in, and I'll see you tomorrow morning with Dr. Mike.
Now I'd like to say a few words. Hello? I must be going. I cannot say I came, but say I must be going. I'm glad I came, but just the same, I must be going. La la.
But I think you must stay. If you should go away, you promised Tommy I am sorry.
I'll stay a week or two. I'll stay the summer through, but I am telling you, I must be away.